This is Boston Public Radio. I'm Callie Crossley. 2012 was a tough year for Republicans, including those in blue Massachusetts. The current Republican Party chairman is stepping down this month, opening up the field to a new crop of candidates who want to lead the Massachusetts GOP. Today, we kick off our series of interviews with the candidates running for the Mass GOP chair. Joining me now are Dean Cavaretta and David Darkangelo. They're a team running for party chair for the Massachusetts GOP. Welcome.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Callie.
So you're the only team running for the chair. Why did you decide to run as a team?
Well, David and I have been colleagues for a long time in the party, and we've worked on other races and supported other candidates. And we sat down after the 2010 cycle, the gubernatorial elections, and came up with our website. And we sat down and we said, you know, how can we do things differently? How can we change the outcome of some of our statewide races? And that was the genesis of newmassplaybook.com.
So what do you think you can do as a team that the single candidates may not be able to offer in terms of leadership?
Really just build on our collective experience and try to turn the page for Republicans. I think you started your intro with 2012 was a rough year for Republicans. Really, if we go back about 40 years, it's been rough for Republicans. So,
well, not this rough, though.
Yeah, you know, we really are on the verge of third-party status, and we're trying to change that. We're trying to bring about a new change in the Mass Republican Party. We're trying to really focus on urban areas. We're trying to focus on bringing in a new constituency into the party that the perception traditionally hasn't been there, particularly minorities. We really want to try to get minorities in there. Myself, I'm legally blind. I think we need to try to get some disabled people involved. We need to try to get women involved, people of all ethnicities involved, because our message of self-reliance and thrift and smaller government, fiscal conservatism, we think those are messages that apply to more than just Republicans. And you know, if we look back, I worked for Paul Cellucci, and I think one of the things that Governor Cellucci was successful in doing is having a balanced approach, being able to work with both sides of the aisle and really trying to bring everybody in and say, hey, look, you know, let's be the check on the Democrat spending. The Democrats want to spend all of our money. Let's see how we can moderate that back and all come to a consensus here. So really kind of a balanced approach and try to bring non-traditional constituencies back into the Republican Party.
That's my guess. David Darkangelo, he's here with Dean Cavaretta, who's about to speak, and they're a team running for party chair of the Mass GOP.
You know, Callie, one of the things David talked about was broadening our base, reaching out to new voters. And as a public school teacher, I think education could be a very big wedge issue for us, an issue that we can lead on, whether it be school choice or educational excellence, charter schools, which certainly for the city of Boston is a big issue right now. And so as a school teacher, as a practicing school teacher, I don't think we can we have to concede anything to the Democrats on that. And education is still very much an issue, just like it was in 1993 with the Education Reform Act.
So a couple of things. David mentioned that he worked for Paul Cellucci. You all are long steeped in politics here in Massachusetts. You're both veterans, so people should know you just didn't fall off the turnip truck yesterday. You were a Malden city councilor. I mean, David was a Malden city councilor.
And still am.
And Dean, you worked for Karen Polito's 2010 campaign for state treasurer. So I say that in context so that people understand the context of your website, which is the new Mass Playbook.
Yes. And
you've articulated a new direction you want to go in. How do you do that, steeped as you are in the old, if you will, but wanting to go and create a new Mass Playbook? And how do you do that when one of the issues was this past campaign was not just for Massachusetts, but the entire context of the national GOP party, which often sort of slapped back the locals here.
Yeah, it's very challenging. As I knock on doors in Malden, you know, one of the first questions that people ask is not how you stand on a certain issue, but are you a Democrat or Republican? You know, that's the first thing. And oftentimes, you know, when I tell them I'm Republican, some of them choose to go into the national thing, issue du jour of the day. And I think it's important to make a distinction that here in Massachusetts, we're not Alabama. We can't carry those issues forward here and be, you know, so strident on the right, these arch right wingers. That's it's a losing proposition. We're interested in winning. Thus, I think you see two moderates here trying to be able to work. I'm on the Malden City Council, and I know how you get things done is you roll up your sleeves and you talk to your constituents, because at the end of the day, I represent everybody, Democrats, Republican, unenrolled, third-party candidates, and it's important to be able to work together. So really the basis of the new Mass playbook is the concept of equity and really trying to bring forward a platform and the manner with which we run candidates. We have less to say about ideology. There's certain Democrats that are very conservative that are probably more conservative mm-hmm. than me. And there are certain Republicans that are probably much more liberal than us as well. To us, it's less about ideology and more about, I think if you were to go to even the most ardent Democrat and say, hey, is our system of government meant to work with just one party? They would even agree and say, no, you know what? I took civics in school. Our party, our system of government works best when we have more than one party.
Well, in fact, David, I mean, you make an important point because, in fact, Dean, most people in Massachusetts have said that over and over. Listen, I may be a Democrat, but I like to see two parties and have voted accordingly, particularly in the state legislature. So what's happening? What's happened recently? What happened in 2012? And a lot of, Republicans are very disgusted saying, how can you turn down Richard Tesei? How can you take, come on, yeah. That's a reasonable, this guy is reasonable, right. He's qualified, he's, whatever you need in the political candidate, there he is. And when you look at those examples and those folks didn't win, that it saddens people.
It's a great question, and there are some people on our side that are very distraught right now, and we are, because we saw a lot of great people that didn't make it. We knew sitting legislators that got voted out who are excellent representatives for us. I think it comes down to several things, particularly when you're dealing with the headwinds, say, on the national level. First of all, we're going to party activists saying, and elected officials saying, we're focused on operations. How can we get more effective in running our campaigns, which means messaging, means organization, coordination? How do we help a campaign and then supplement a campaign? We think it comes down to, reorging our operations to reach more places in the Commonwealth. Comes down to changing the narrative, talking about issues other than the generic issues that we've been talking about. In urban outreach, we literally have to reach more places geographically. In the city of Boston, in Worcester County, in Springfield, we've said, and we've come up with a little phrase on the campaign trail, it's hard to believe we're another campaign, but you can't get 51% of the vote. By going to only 75% of the state. And so we're trying to work with our fellow colleagues and saying, look, how do we reorganize to reach more voters? How do we get to all the college students here in Boston? How do we compete more in the wards that traditionally we're getting blown out 95-10 or 95-5 or something like that?
Hey, Kelly, I have a very specific example if you'd like. If you look at the last election that just happened a month or so ago, if you look at several of the areas in Boston, okay? There's 22 wards in Boston. Scott Brown was only able to win one of those wards. And let's look at a particular example, okay? If you look at Ward 12, Precinct 1, for example, I'm going to use this for a very specific reason, so if you follow me. So Ward 12, Precinct 1, there was 1,060 votes cast total. Elizabeth Warren got 1,029. Scott Brown got 30 votes. So the reason why I say that is because the margin there is 1,030 votes.
And describe where that is geographically.
That is roughly, I believe, over the Roslindale, JP area, kind of, I
the
think.
The general vicinity.
Over
okay.
there, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think more coming south, a little bit towards Roxbury area.
That's mm-hmm. Ward 11.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the reason why I say that, keep that in mind, 1,030 votes. Well, if you look at the town of Sturbridge, Scott Brown had to win the entire town of Sturbridge by 1,030 votes just to break even. So out of the 255 precincts in the city of Boston, he had to win the entire town of Sturbridge to break even in one precinct in Boston.
Well, first, let me say you're David D'Arcangelo, and you're here with Dean Cavaretta, and both of you are a team running for the party chair for the Massachusetts GOP, and you're both talking about your platform to win over the 80 committee members who will vote on January 31st for the new Mass GOP chair. So I want to follow up about that Scott Brown campaign, because I've had in the studio more than once a rare species, a black Republican, who said he was very unhappy that Scott Brown did not show up in communities of color himself. He sent representatives He made a presence, which was a huge leap from what had happened in the past. You know, there were some billboards. There were some folk that were hired to represent him who were true believers. I'm not just, he didn't pick people up off the street. But, you know, they were there. And there was likely some other support. But people were annoyed they did not see him. So how do you convince communities of Republicans who for so long traditionally have said, why go there and expend energy because there will be no response?
Well, that's a great question. And, I, you know, as we speak to you, Callie, and through you to the 80 state committee members and other activists, I think David and I are going to lead by example. I mean, we're going to go to those communities and say, look, this is our background. These are the issues that we've worked on. I'm a public school teacher out in Metro West. I've had Metco students. I've coached Metco students. We care about our urban centers. We're not going to not address the issues that, that people in the cities of our state care about. And it is a messaging and PR thing. If people perceive our party to be intolerant or inflexible, we're going to come back and say, look, we're the party of school choice, personal freedom. And we're going to move beyond those barriers and really say to them, look, we're here. We want to start a dialogue and we're going to operate differently.
And how do you disengage but remain connected to the national party? Because that's what we're talking about. I had Jennifer Nassour, who was the former chairman here, not long after the election. And she said there was some conversation among New England Republicans about setting up a kind of, if not organization, caucus to have more of a collective influence on the national party. Because, you know, as you've said, David, it's a real difference in Massachusetts. And the national party, for a lot of issues, are just not resonating here in Massachusetts.
That's right. I think my parents were products of the Great Depression, so they always taught me to accentuate the positive. Right? And to do more with less. And I think that's what we need to focus on here. We need to put forward the, not change our platform, but rather take the parts of our platform that do resonate and accentuate those, accentuate the positive, and really push the ideas of thrift and self-reliance. And I'll give you a particular example of something that we could challenge even conventional wisdom. The Republicans have allowed the Democrats to take this idea of the green movement and the environmental movement away. To me, that's baffling. The very nature of environmentalism is to conserve things, ergo conservative movement. You know, so it shouldn't be about we let the other parties, whether it be the media, whether it be, you know, opinion leaders and agenda setters, take that and say, oh, well, it's about global warming. It shouldn't be about global warming. We should redo that dialogue.
Reframe it
to make it about. No, it should be about running things efficiently, and it should be about maximizing resources, because at the end of the day, those are conservative principles, and those are moderately conservative principles. The world is growing green, and here we are stuck in, you know, 1950s ideology. It just doesn't work. We can catch it up, and we can really become that party to be able to say, you know what, we're the party of small business, and we have an interest in making things run efficiently. Because it's good business to do that.
Mm-hmm. You know, Callie, and I think that's the role of a state party, is to step up and fill the communications vacuum and say, look, we're going to accentuate our positives, and these are our themes. This is the history of our party. I got a call the other day from an activist that suggested we bring back the ballot question regarding prevailing wage. And should a local municipality have the ability to hire a contractor of their choice at the price that they can afford to save money locally? And we've talked to activists when we talk about the landmark 1980 Proposition 2.5 ballot question. You know, if you think about it, it wasn't just about taxes. It was about local control. Who should have the right to raise taxes a certain percentage on their property? And so those are the themes that we'd like to go back to as the state party, because all we can do is supplement campaigns. Candidates and campaigns will step up and run based on their record or what they want to do. We can create a framework where we're saying these are the types of candidates we're offering up, and these are the themes that we care about.
And you've been talking about starting below Senate level, if you will, about making certain that there is a real pipeline, not just one that appears when there is an election. Go ahead, David.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, going back to Dean's point for one second, then I'll dovetail in. So I think the thing with Proposition 2.5 is very important, because that's been on the books for, what, 30-something years now. All throughout that time, it's been an entirely Democratic-controlled legislature. At any point in time, they could repeal that. They choose not to. which really means a lot to us because that, again, that was a conservative principle. That's a fiscally conservative ideology to have there, and the Democrats have embraced it. So the fact that it hasn't been overturned, the fact that it hasn't been gutted, the fact that overrides really are kind of few and far between in the Commonwealth, I think that really gives traction that there are elements out there that all voters, Democrat, unenrolled, and Republicans, appeal to.
And Callie, just to jump in here, I think, and be very specific, David and I intend to commission a task force of elected officials and party leaders to come back with recommendations on ballot questions that we can push going forward. We're getting a consensus there, David and I traveling, that that might be the way to go. And it's an opportunity for local candidates to run on themes that we've been talking about and contrast themselves with the one-party legislature, where a lot of the backbencher members are just going to do what the speaker wants. So we intend to do that. We want to let party people know that, that we're going to push for that and really try to move the conversation beyond the standard lines that we're hearing over the last several cycles.
One of the things that I keep repeating here that I don't think a lot of people understand, that even though, at least by the last election, overwhelmingly people voted Democratic, most people in the state are independent. They are not affiliated with either party, third, second, first, any party. And they take some pride in that. So this either represents what's happened here, the devastation, as some have called it, with the last election and the losing of so many Republican candidates, a real opportunity, or some even in your party have suggested, just give it up. Just, you know, forget it. There's nothing that's happening in Massachusetts. It's just anti-Republican, whatever. We had this discussion just last week with a political roundtable, and I agreed with another commentator that this represents a real opportunity.
I agree with you, Kelly. Get down to the ground, that's where you start again, right? Well, absolutely. And you know, sometimes it takes the worst thing to happen to kind of rebuild it, you know, and let the phoenix rise from the ashes. I have a data point for you that I think you'll find interesting to what you indicated. If you go back to 1990, the last quote-unquote Republican wave with Sweld and Cellucci and everybody and Malone, right, and you look at the total voters, there was 3.2 million total voters then. There's 4.3 million now. And an interesting thing is, there was 1.35 unenrolled at that time, which represented about 42% of the voting electorate. Now there's 52.5. So even though we've added a certain amount, we've more than doubled that in the terms of people who are registered to vote, right? So the large majority of the people, I mean, close to 53% of the people are unenrolled. So they're saying, hey, you know what? We'll consider a Republican. We'll consider a Democrat. We'll consider anybody. And I think that is a real opportunity for us to be able to build, because if you look at the Democrats and the Republicans over that span of time, they've both added, and we've added about the same rate. So I think that's very interesting, that it's not like the Democrats are like all of a sudden enrolling more people than us, or they're both relatively the same. It's the unenrolled that are really having the rise.
It's who can make the best argument to independence at this point.
Absolutely, yes.
And who independents believe is sincere in making that argument. So let me ask this question, because one commentator, as we said in our opening of our show, says the Mass GOP is one senator away from irrelevance at this point. And that, of course, is a reference to Scott Brown. We assume he's going to run for Senator John Kerry's seat. Let's just play out both the odds. Let's say he runs, he does not win. What does that mean for you in terms of the GOP party?
Well, David and I have said that we have to start thinking about election night 2014 right now. And we have to go to party activists and legislators and officials and say, look, what do we want the fall of 2014 to look like right now? And take lessons learned and improve upon that. So we're focused on the long term. I mean, we have a lot of work to do. We realize that it's not alone. That's one of the reasons we're running as a team. We're trying to include everybody. There's certainly plenty to work on. You know, when you talk about all the unenrolled voters that are potentially there, we have to do a better job reaching out to the college campuses. As one example, taking people, the millennials, who are more libertarian, conservative in thinking.
And also more unenrolled as a group.
Right.
Yeah, you know, in any party.
You know, you stay in New England, if you stay in Boston or Massachusetts in particular, this is the other political party, and we're reaching out to you. I'm a two-time Northeastern grad, and you know, I'd like to see us reach out and really go after these younger voters.
All right, let's start big, and then we'll narrow here. So I think you need to start we need to change the dialogue. So often coming out of Merrimack Street are these shrilly press releases that are just negative and bleh. That's not how you're going to attract people to a party. You have to show them a vision. So our first thing would be based on just be entirely positive. If candidates particularly want to go negative within their campaign, well, then that's prerogative. That's their prerogative. We wouldn't encourage that. But again, as a party, we need to be sending entirely positive messages. That's the first thing. The second thing is in terms of we can't run these all or nothing top of the ticket campaigns and then they lose and then where are we? There's no equity. So there's a thing within the Mass playbook that we call is negative equity campaigning. We can't allow for any negative equity campaigns. We have to run campaigns that leave equity behind and it leaves it better than what you found it. Again, going back to my parents and what they taught me, you know, when you go into a situation, be resolved to leave it better than what you found it. That hasn't necessarily been the case over the years. And that's not to denigrate anybody, but it's really to say we need to start operating differently. We're the party of small business, yet we're not operating. We'd be out of business if we were a small business. We're not operating that way. So we've got to have a positive message. We've got to start running equity-driven campaigns, and we've got to do it from the ground up. Compete everywhere. Help all these candidates that meet the criteria. We have a very rigorous set of criteria. In other words, we can't let candidates carry the Republican banner that are going to go out there and they're going to have, you know, one candidate in a recent election had like an effigy of the president on his lawn. Come on, what? That is not allowed. We have to say absolutely not. That is not allowed. You need to be either effusive in your appraise of Democrats or don't say, if you can't say something nice, then don't say anything at all. And that doesn't make us any less Republican or any less tied to our ideals. But you know what? As a party right now, we don't have a seat at the big boys' table. We have to earn that. We have to earn that. And until we do, we can't go down that road. So our plan is to build from the grassroots, literally from the precinct level up.
And what we're hearing, Callie, too, from activists who are our consumers, I mean, I think we have, in an overall sense, we have to bring more customer service to the Mass GOP. Activists and people who volunteer want training. They want training in get out the vote. They want training in how to run campaigns. And so we're committed to doing that. We're hearing that from state committee members that if you have an activist that's well trained, that person will go and work for campaigns over more than one cycle. And it builds upon the equity theme that David's talked about. So we're committed to that. It gets us back to, you know, us thinking about election years now and how much work we have from, say, February 1st to the end of this year, irrespective of the special election. I mean, that's an important possibility, but we're thinking about 2014 as well. And lot of our local elected officials and legislators have a lot of good ideas, and we have to listen to them and be responsive to them.
New Mass Playbook is based on 6 to 8 years. We're looking at 14, 16, 18, really, to be able to, because you're going to have to go out. You're going to have to enroll voters. We don't do a very good job of doing that. We need to have voter enrollment drives. You need to go door to door with a clipboard in these urban areas that have never been canvassed and say, hey, you know what? Maybe we have some issues that appeal to you. Self-reliance, thrift.
Education, school choice.
Fiscal discipline, school choice, things like that. We really believe that there's a good amount of voters in these urban districts right now that if you were able to get them into a conversation, you could appeal to them and you could probably get them to enroll. But right now, we don't do a very good job of voter enrollment. We need to increase our voter enrollment to, we're at about 11.8 right now. We need to get it closer to 20. If we can get it closer to 20, then the numbers start to work out a little bit better in your favor of saying, okay, if we get all of the Republicans to vote for us and then we can get this amount of the unenrolled, we have a viable chance of winning. Right now, I'm not sure if a Republican can win statewide. The numbers, the math problem is just so much to overcome. Look at Scott Brown, for an example. You can't lose the city of Boston by 120,000 votes. The seat of New England, the largest city in New England, you know, the other 10 communities behind it, like, equal that vote total. You can't lose that by 120,000 votes because there's not enough Sturbridges left to be
to
able
make
to
up
overcome
the
that.
Right.
And, you know,
right.
we're trying to gear our reorganization towards the capital city, towards Worcester, towards Springfield, and go to the state committee members who will play a big role in this and say, look, you know, maybe we should have a Region 6. and focus resources and time in the city here to compete.
And I go back to Prop 2.5. If Prop 2.5 was not a righteous ideal, if it wasn't a good idea, it would have been repealed by now.
All right.
So
well,
it's not. So we have a chance. We're optimistic. We're entirely positive. We want to move this thing forward, bring people into the party with a positive message.
This is David Darkangelo speaking, along with Dean Cavaretta. They are a team running for party chair of the Massachusetts GOP with the new GOP playbook as their platform. We'll be speaking with other candidates running for the party chair as we go along. And the final vote is January 31st by 80 committee members. Thank you both very much, Dean Cavaretta and David Darkangelo.
Thank you, Kelly.
What does a man do with 800 patents, and how does the research that goes into getting them ready help society? Kara Miller will be bringing you that conversation. I'm Callie Crossley. You're listening to 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio.